The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Andy Lee Meets on Off the Ball.
In association with the all-new Seat Leon, the brand's first fully connected car.
You know, my stuff has been around teams, trying to improve individual players, but ultimately about getting the best performance from the team and getting results with teams as well, I suppose. That's always been the most important part of it to me, while trying to improve the individuals and being a bit concerned about the rest of their life as well. I think as a coach and as a manager, you have a responsibility. It can't be just about the winning of the game or the winning of the tournament, the winning of the match. There's also got to be a more holistic approach with regard to the individuals you're involved with.
Let's get into it.
He wears the black trunks with red trim. His professional record, 34 victories with 2 defeats, 24 wins by way of knockout. Hailing from Limerick, Ireland, introducing Andy Lee.
Brian, thank you very much for joining us. I've known you a while, but like, I was surprised to see you started coaching at 13 years old. An under-11s team, Crumlin United. Was that right?
Well, my first team was actually in the road leagues. They were road leagues in the Drimna area, and there was an under-13.5 section which I was eligible to play in, but there was an under-11 section. So I decided to gather up the lads that were slightly younger than me and enter the under-11 section. And we did all right.
Yeah.
We won it. But anyway, that was my start, my coaching. I don't know where that came from. Mm. Why? Maybe I owned the ball or something. But it may have come from my father being a boxing coach. But from then on, I always liked the idea of the control of the decision making, of judging players and judging people a little bit, and. But my first official team was in the schoolboy league. I was playing for Crumlin United under 15, and I was managing an under 13 team at that time. So, but I would have had a little bit of help here and there. I would have had other guys.
Yeah. So would you say like your love for coaching or your wanting to coach kind of developed as you went on? It just kind of happened, or was it something that was instant or something that you grew into?
I think grew into. I think I saw my father as the coach in the boxing clubs in Drimna, in St John Bosco, and in Trinity College. He had coached several other teams before that. But I saw maybe his influence as being the leader with the group, that he could help people to do a bit better. I don't know. Maybe that. But I think there was also a bit of frustration as a player that I wasn't making the progress I wanted to make as a player. I played against players who were better than me, which annoyed me. I wanted to be the best player. And maybe, you know, I fell into coaching a little bit, that it fulfilled me more than the fulfillment I got as a player. I was a decent enough player. I would have had trials.
That's a big, from at a young age, it's a big realisation to think I'm not good enough to make it or be as good as I want to be. A lot of guys would fight against. I'm sure you did fight against it again.
I was still hopeful, Andy, for a long time. I was playing for a very good team in Shelbourne in the top leagues in Dublin. You know, under 17, under 18, we were the top team, and I was good enough to be on that team. But I wasn't the best player. I didn't make the youth international team, and at that stage, I'm looking around me on the team I was playing on. There was, I think, five or six lads that made the Irish Youth International Soccer Team, and I'm going, I'm not that good, but I'm influencing the games that I'm involved in as a manager, and then it just developed. I stayed playing until my mid 20s at some level, but I always seemed to be able to coach at a higher level. People used to ask me to manage teams at a higher level than I could play. Like I managed Shamrock Rovers youth team when I was 20. I was managing Shelbourne's reserve team in League of Ireland.
A year or two between
my own age and the team I'm coaching. It does sound a bit mad now, but obviously other people had a bit of a trust in me. They saw that I had some organisational ability. I was reliable. I was probably strict enough in terms of...
And you felt you had the authority. even
yeah,
though.
I never seemed to have a problem with that. I don't know where that came from, but I never had a problem with discipline with lads who were only a year or two younger than me. I demanded good time keeping, clean boots, clean gear if that was their responsibility, train hard, turn up on time, play to the limits of your ability, and I'll give you a bit of structure to try and win the game. So, and then I kind of was clever enough to know I needed to go on coaching courses.
Yeah.
And I went on my first coaching course when I was 17, actually. I did my English prelim, it was called, but we could do it here in Ireland. So I was trying to do a little bit on the knowledge side, the academic side, as well as know about the game, try to play, try to manage, try to be practical as well.
Mm. And how did, like, going into those coaching courses, do you feel like it reaffirmed what you already knew, or that you were learning and it challenged you, or challenged what you knew?
Definitely learning.
Yeah.
Some comfort that I had a bit of an idea when I went to them, but certainly learning from, you know, I remember going one night a week on the course here with the great Billy Young. He was manager of Bohemians for many, many years. But then on the prelim course, the English prelim course, it was Dave Bacuzzi. Unfortunately, Dave died recently. He was a former English player, played for Arsenal and Reading, and he came to Cork as a player manager of Cork in his early 30s. And he was a great player, and it was a great Cork team he had, Cork Hibernians, that won the double around that time, 70-71. And he was the tutor on the course, and I felt I learned an awful lot from him in that week. We had there, there was another Englishman come in, Alan Wade, to do the exams, and the exams were very testing. I don't know if it's the same situation in boxing coaching. I'm sure it is to some degree.
Really.
When you're asked to put on the session,
yeah,
it is the most taxing thing, the toughest exam in writing exams and doing your junior cert or leaving cert or university exam or whatever people have to do. I know that's very trying. I've done it myself. But being out in the middle of a pitch, being examined by someone on the sideline where you're responsible for maybe a 20-minute session. It's very, and anyone who's done it will tell you that, you know, the greatest players who've ever had to go through that process as a coach,
yeah,
will tell you. It's quite difficult.
Like, would that have been something that you would have kept on throughout your career, like coursing and re-education? Because even in my short time coaching a couple of boxers now, you find that being that authoritative figure and being like having that opinion and wanting to listen, and it is kind of intoxicating. Like, it feeds the ego a lot, doesn't it? Because, you know, run up that stair, run over there, do that, no, hit the bag, don't throw a punch this way. And like, you feel like it's, you have to keep challenging yourself, I think, don't you? Like, what you think you know, quick question.
Yeah, on the knowledge side, I was lucky enough as a young person to be close to a few, what I would have considered, they probably didn't consider themselves as coaches, they would have considered themselves as managers. But thinking back over the years, I had people who, maybe the first team manager at Shelbourne was a man called Jerry Doyle, who lived not too far from me in Drimnagh. There was a man called Tom Rowan, who was actually the secretary of the club. But there were wise men, and Fran Ray and Freddie Strand. When I was a young person, I used to mix with these people and listen to them talking about the game. And I think that was very important, to absorb the knowledge of experience. How you get authority, I don't know how I had authority, because I wasn't very tall, I wasn't big like you, I wasn't a great physical specimen, and neither had I got a career that anyone looked at and said, oh, he was a great player, he played and he won medals. I didn't win any world titles. Your own career gives you authority. People look at you, Andy Lee, and go, he did it, he's not just talking about it.
I know, with teaching and doing it, completely different.
Yeah, they are different skills. Mm. But I think that's a great base when you've achieved, when you've gone through the ropes. And you.
Yeah, you'll always go to the well, like, you know, and think, how would I have done this? Or even someone, like you said, how would one of my mentors have handled the situation? But
given being able to transfer that information to somebody else,
yeah,
is another skill.
It is.
And I probably did it on the hoof without a deep knowledge when I was a young manager, a young coach. But I understood that what I was doing kind of worked, because I would have been working with, the young players that I had around Crumlin area weren't the top players in Dublin by any means, but we were a very, very competitive team, and we were near the top. We were, second in the top league in Dublin. There was a team better than Joseph's. St. Joseph's team were better than us consistently. They had better players, better facilities, better everything. But we had a great fighting spirit, but we also had good...
You had the bunker mentality.
Also had the tactical knowledge, I think, the players, that I was able to give them a bit of that. But then, I was lucky enough to be with Liam Toohey when I was only 20 years of age, who had been the Irish manager, played for Ireland. And people like that had a great influence on me. I listened to them talking about the game and about how players should be and what they should do in certain situations. But then I think going to coaching courses improves your knowledge when you're listening to and getting guidance of how to structure training sessions and man management and psychology. I think I knew about psychology, but I didn't know it was psychology. It was experience.
Because having, authority, but say coaching underage teams, say like for me, coaching a couple of young lads like Paddy Donovan, Jason Quigley, guys look up to me, but then going into training Tyson Fury, who's unified heavyweight world champion.
Knows it all.
And then I'm walking in there, I've only been coaching 6 months and I'm going to have to train him, take the session. And you do have those doubts. Like, I wonder, did you ever have those, coming from the underage team, going to the senior international team, working with those players now?
Oh, yeah. And I think anyone who says they don't have doubts about themselves are probably lying a bit. I've always questioned what I was doing. I always questioned, are the methods right? And am I making the right decisions? Am I extracting the maximum from the ability and the potential of those that I'm working with? And yes, I would always doubt. And that's why I think I've always, as a manager and a coach, I've always been a listener and been more than happy to surround myself with people who I felt were better than me loads of things. And not to the extent that I'd be jealous of them, but I'd be admiring them. And I think if you talk about you as a coach and working with young boxers and Paddy Donovan and Jason Quigley, both boxers with massive potential, and then you with Fury, who has been there, has made massive mistakes in his life. And it seems, would have been difficult for people to really get a hold of him and keep him at the right level on a consistent basis. But you were able to influence that by your experiences, by being able to say, well, look, I've been down some of those roads as well.
Yeah.
But now I've stepped back from them all, from all the people, the agents, the promoters, the managers, the trainers, and you can assess them. And, I've read your book and how you've assessed the coaches and your love and relationship with your coaches and Emmanuel and that great relationship you had with him, but having to move on from that and finding a new coach. So you're able to evaluate those people. I've evaluated all the people I ever worked with, let's say, or listened to, and tried to incorporate little bits of them, but then just try to be yourself. Doubts? Loads of doubts.
And I think that's the biggest part, is just be yourself, because if you're not, they'll see through it. Do you ever feel like that? With dealing with players in your case, but with Tyson, actually the perception and what he does in the gym is like he's the most professional and dedicated when he's actually training. You couldn't ask for a better fighter to train, because he's just 100%, and he just wants to learn and wants to work. But it is, I think it's just being yourself in those situations, and they can, because they'll read, they'll like, you know,
yeah. I think
I don't
think
know if I players
think
are the same, but fighters are always testing.
I think a spill for his family.
Yeah.
Easy. I think players and boxers, I think, will spot early, relatively early, whether someone knows their stuff or doesn't.
Yeah.
Or whether someone is humble enough to say, I don't know at all, what do you think? And the modern coaching is become that way a little bit, where the players
are
much more involved. And in boxing, I'm sure individual sports the same, they're much more involved in decision making of the process of the how, and they're much more involved in maybe the process of agreeing what the tactics are. Mm. As a coach, I think I would have taken on board what other people had around me, what other coaches felt, direction we should go.
What if something wasn't totally at odds with what you had thought? The way you play, or
I go with my own hunch. And I'd always say that to coaches coming along, and as a guidance, I would say, you know, assess all the information, interpret all the information, analyze it, distill it, and then go with your own hunch. And if that proves to be wrong, well then you've learned a little bit as well about yourself, and you may have to put your hand up and say, maybe should have done it a bit different. I was very much that way, whether I'd say it in front of players or not, as a group of players, but certainly among my assistants and peers, I would have no problem with admitting mistakes or faults or inadequacies in my own ability.
Yeah, at the top of the stage you said something interesting about coaching the player, but also like coaching the person in a holistic like way. Do you feel that's an important role for, like, maybe it's more personal with boxing, but like if a fighter is doing everything in the gym but outside of the gym, maybe a player the same, they're not living the right way, or you're trying to, they have problems at home, like how much of that responsibility does a coach take on in terms of being a father figure or something to a fighter, whether he wants it or not, you know? Because sometimes they don't want
in professional sport, I think it becomes much more ruthless. You know, in a club, it's how can we win the games? How do I satisfy the demands of the support, the directors, the owner, the chairman? And the ability of the manager within that environment to have time to try to be a mentor, a life mentor, a bit of a guide to the players becomes a lot more limited, and maybe he's affected manager because it's professional sport and they have to make business decisions about players' futures, about contracts and future contracts and money. It becomes a lot more difficult. But I believe there's a responsibility there on everybody, on every coach and manager and owner and director to care about the players' welfare and their future in life after their sport. I think in boxing it's a particular responsibility because boxing is such a tough sport, such a hard sport to make a living out of, such a hard sport to come out of with any money in your pocket. Other sports like football, there's not too many of them, but the professional ball games, let's say football, Australian rules, maybe cricket, rugby, the modern rugby game, players can make money and can prepare for a life outside the game. Boxing is a particularly difficult one. But in amateur sport, I think all coaches have an absolute responsibility to be a mentor and a guide and maybe an example. We can't all live our lives as saints, so maybe players would look at us and go, he was a bit of a mad boy or whatever he was. But they will also see things like discipline, hard work, graft, good principles, strong principles. And you would hope that would help a little bit, you know?
It is like learning from, like, teaching by example or teaching, you know, like, you learn more from what you see, like what you can see, like in terms of in a boxing gym or not what I can tell you. So how would you agree with that? Like, that would be very hard for in football though, wouldn't it? Like, I think, like, if I can show you how to do something, or if we're in the gym and I'm training guys and there's somebody else who I think he's really good, he's in the gym with us, watch him, watch what he does, watch how he does that. They'll learn more from watching him than me actually telling them how to do it, you know?
Yeah, well that's, you know, that's a technical part of coaching, is to be able to analyse whatever it is, whether it's the movements in boxing, it's the moves and the feints, and in reading your book, the psychology of the movements and thinking ahead and luring people into a mistake and being prepared to to wait and have the patience to wait for that mistake and then make the right move, whether that's a shuffle or a step to one side. You know the technical part of that. So there's the knowledge part of that and being able to show the move, slow down in slow motion. Now, you obviously in the gym, you can show somebody else that does it. Me as a football coach, I could show a little bit. I wasn't bad in terms of showing how to pass it or how to curl it, or, you know, but I wasn't going to try and show Roy Keane how to pass it between two guys who are less than social distance apart when the game has been played at 90 miles an hour. I wasn't going to try and show Robbie Keane how to finish in the box when he's been marked by 2 6-foot-3 centre backs. But what I could do is set up practices that allowed him to test himself to the limit, or to almost game speed. Not the same situation where the crowd are at the game, but, you know, to have the understanding of that I might have someone in the group who was very good. You know, I had Chris Fulton working with me, who was one of the great fullbacks of the game in his time, a very modern fullback in his time as a player at Spurs. You know, and he could show fullbacks how to play fullback and positioning. I could show them positioning and where I'd like them to be relative to other players on the team in the picture I have in my mind. But he might be better at showing body position, body shape, how you shape up in a 1v1 against a fast, tricky winger. So, you know, to be able, I think it's important to be able to be aware of that as well yourself, and not to be a spoofer, and not to be trying to show fellas that you can't really show. But as a coach, to observe and then show is an important part of being the coach, isn't it? Observe, analyse, correct, give the information.
Repetize it. Yeah. Till it becomes a habit.
Yeah. But give the information of correction. That's.
You also have to allow a bit of space for improvisation too. You know, let a player let him.
Yeah. I can remember doing, like over the years, doing a lot of tactical stuff. And the one that often comes up is about Damien, you know, Damien Duff. He was such a great technical player, technical ability. He was probably the best player I ever was close to, you know. Beating men, speed, change of direction, fast feet, control of the ball, having the ball under control, accelerate. Oh, and then within a tactical thing, you know, with the team in Malaysia at the World Cup in 97, it was a tough competition, ferociously hot. Tremendous humidity, difficult conditions. So we had a tactical, very tactical game we had to play in order to preserve energy, control possession, be patient, let the opposition have a bit of it, pick our time and moments. And within all that tactical thing, we had 11. You've 11 players, you've scored a bit. I remember explaining some detailed tactical stuff, and then I remember taking Damien aside. And I said, you see all that stuff, a lot of it applies to you, but you just do your own thing when you get the ball. To allow him not to be worried about, when I get it, I've got to pick that pass, because he showed us on the training ground, play it into the front man, Neil Fenn, hold her up, Neil, wait till Trevor Malloy arrives, wait till Thomas Morgan arrives. No, when you get it, you go with your instinct as a player, beat two if you can, stick it in the net if you can. Yeah. You know, you've got to allow people that, improvise freedom. And that's the ability of the coach as well, the knowledgeable coach, to be able to say, well, I'll put a shape on it, and there's a distinct shape on it. This is how I want it, but you have got to make the decisions as well within what's going on in the game, in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the fight, in the heat of the battle. You might have to wait for 3 or 4 rounds for that moment to arrive.
And do you think now coaching, and you, or do you think you'll get back into coaching?
I don't know. I've been frustrated. I've really enjoyed what I've been doing in the media for the last number of years. The last series.
Your reputation has grown and grown and grown. It's funny because you've had that huge career and successes, but in the last few years, through your media work, it's like people really appreciate you more now than, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but when you were actually coaching and playing and involved in the game?
Well, I don't know.
You think
know.
No? I don't know.
I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, it might not be the case.
But it may not be the case. You might be just saying nice things.
No, I really think there's been like I remember a bit moving into. I remember we were at the charity. Charity soccer
Saturday
matches.
Event. Yeah, World Refugee Day.
And you were playing up in the King's Inn.
And
I said, oh, it's great to see you, Brian. You've had such a huge comeback. You know, it was like I don't know. It was like...
well, I never...
It was not really a comeback.
I never
you know?
Retired. Look, you know, I haven't had an opportunity that attracted me over the last few years. But I would like to have a go again at running a team. But I enjoy what I'm doing and the opportunity to work in the media for various different people and to go to matches and to have to keep... To study the game while and stay up with what's going on in the game, it's marvellous. And to that people think that there's a value in what you say is interesting too. But also to enjoy it and meet people and meet people from different sports and have a bit of fun around it as well, I think is very important. And I thoroughly enjoy it, but I'd enjoy coaching. Any little bit I really enjoy it, no matter what level it's at, just seeing people.
And if you could only do one for the rest of your life, coaching or media?
Coaching. Been in the dressing room, been at the sideline of the pitch. I've stood at the sideline of Lansdowne a few times lately, working on the media side of it.
You miss the buzz you get from just
being at the sideline of the pitch, near the action, and having a part to play in it. Even if it's only a media part, it's kind of interesting. But having the...
It does, if I do commentary on a fight, it kind of fills the void, or it gives you that little fix that you need. Involvement.
But you've gone from a level where it's almost a sharp cut-off. You've been world champion, another couple of fights, and then you made a decision, it's finished. Mm. And the wisdom of that decision as well is brilliant, because too many, too often, as you have related to, go on too long and they don't get the rewards for it. But the cut-off in boxing is very, very severe. There aren't a huge number of media outlets covering boxing, for instance. Not that you just have to cover boxing by any means, but it's a very sharp cut-off. And for a lot of boxers, it's not a comparison to football, because in football there's so many levels of football where somebody can go and enjoy. He can take up a team, he can take up a club, he can get in at an amateur level, semi-pro level, professional level. Anywhere in the world there's an opportunity if you want to go for it. It's not the case in boxing where you can continue to make a living once you've finished. The coaching opportunities are very, very limited. So, you know, it's not the same. And
even the coaching is costing you money more than you're making.
I can imagine. I've huge admiration for the boxing life and the people in boxing.
Yeah. I often thought the similarities between an international coach or player, like an international coach and a professional boxer, because with a boxing fight, like professional boxing, you might only fight once every 3 or 4 months. And if you lose that fight, it might be six months before you get a fight again. And you have to live with that loss. And the same with international football. You're playing maybe 2 times a week and then it's another 3 or 4 weeks.
As an international manager, I would say that one of the biggest frustration was when you didn't win the game, you need to win the game, and there isn't a game. For a month in the best part of the season, say in the international season, is normally there's a match in March. There used to be one in April, there's not now, but there'd be two in May, June, or if there was a finals tournament, there'd be a few more. Then there's nothing July. There used to be a friendly in August. September, he'd be busy. October, he'd be busy. November, there'd be a couple of matches. But most of November, December, January, February, there'd be no international match. And if you didn't do well in the October game, that was a hard period waiting to try and repair that. You know, and I can understand what you're saying about... But boxing, for all boxers like that, except for, I mean, looking back at the history of boxing, where some fellas used to have 200 and 300 fights going back, in the 40s and 50s, and earlier, it's extraordinary where they used to box so frequently, but I presume they had to do it to make a living wage for their families. And there was a lot more boxers, a lot more halls, was a lot more events. Now it's driven by television coverage, really, isn't it? And there isn't so many opportunities.
And I want to ask you about that as well. Like, say, those fighters in the 50s and whatever, the 40s, 50s, they would have fought 15 rounds. They would have fought maybe once every couple of weeks, maybe even more once, twice a week, you know. But they would have fought 15 rounds, weighed in on the same day. There was no strength and conditioning. There was no hydration. You know, there was none of all these modern concepts.
No sports science support.
And how much, but they could still compete and still, like, perform at that level. And how you find the old ways of what you would have started out in coaching and, like, the old school approach and now the modern approach and how they conflict them, which, not which is better, but how supplementing them two together. It's you know, because there is in boxing, it's very, there's an old school way of doing things, and now there seems to be this new way of doing things. But to me, it's not necessarily, it's not a better way of doing things.
No, but isn't it always just about progression? Isn't it just about time moves on, there's more people come around with some new ideas? Sports science has taken a much bigger hold on rehydration, nutrition, preparation between fights. I mean, you're working with Tyson Fury, and from what I am aware of, he would go up massively in weight between fights. I mean, that has been a history of a lot of good boxers, a lot of exceptional boxers, and then they go through this process of getting ready for fight. Now, you know, I would think that is probably not the best way, and modern thinking would say, modern sports science would say that it can't be good for your body, extreme weight coming down to a good weight to box at. But we're just gaining bits of knowledge, and I think that's very important, that we absorb the knowledge, absorb the sports science, take bits and pieces from it that help the performance of the teams. It's obviously very important now, the tracking of players, the analysis of their running ability, the number of sprints, the amount of energy they're using up. All that, I think, is very important. But the ability of the coach is to be able to distill all that information, combine it with the ability, the technical skills of the athlete, of the boxer, of the player, and smooth it off. Ensure that he's getting the right bits of information that are appropriate to him or her to allow them to perform at the highest level. So it's about moving with the times, moving with the information, but retaining the basics.
Yeah, it's like,
the basics and the principles have to be there.
Do you want an athlete, or do you want a player? Or, you know, do you want, like, a specimen, like an athlete who can jump high or run fast? Or do you want a guy who can just take the ball on a touch turn and pass, bing it over there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a fine balance, I guess.
And it's about, you know, ensuring that the training and the preparation take on board. I mean, I used to think at times that sometimes that the strength and conditioning guys became a bit too powerful, that if you listen to them, the training session wouldn't involve enough of technical skills. It wouldn't involve enough practice. Now, of course, they've improved, they understand that now. And that's the ability of the coach to ensure that all the bits that are required are in there in the training and in the preparation. So, you know, it's gone down now where it's about shorter training sessions, the content at a higher tempo, you know, less about long running, distance running, and the sort of stuff that boxers did for years out on the road, running miles and miles and miles. I presume that has changed now down to
some ways, but there is still a space for it, you know what I mean?
Of course there's a space for it, because there's a bit in the brain that says, I need to do this, and I enjoy this, and there's a mental aspect of that.
Definitely.
Going out, I can only think of myself as training myself. I used to like doing a bit of long running, and it gave me time to think about things a bit and think tactically. So
exactly,
you know, but it's about putting everything in the right place, taking it all, distilling it down, what's important, and can we find the right formula that works for the individual and or for the whole team.
Thank you very much, Brian. Fascinating, educational. And before you go, I heard you say something last night. Was it Frank Lampard. I want you to clear something up because Frank Lampard had a face like a robber's dog. Can you clear that one up? What
well,
did you mean?
It was a
it's
phrase.
It's one of the best lines I've ever heard.
It was a phrase my great pal Noel O'Reilly used to say now and again about guys that looked like they weren't too happy about something, you know. He'd say that, he'd face on him. Like a robber's dog. So you have this image of a bloke going around with a little dog, with not the friendliest looking face, a little bowler, as we'd have called him. So in that moment where there was a little incident on the touchline, I think where Liverpool were claiming a penalty or something, and Frank Lampard was having a go at Klopp and his teammates. So it just came out at that moment. But, you know, it was okay. It was all right. You understood. You've seen Robert's dogs in your time. So not a pretty sight.
Brian, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure, Andy. Great to be with you.
Andy Lee Meets on Off The Ball.
In association with the all-new Seat Leon, the brand's first fully connected car.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.